it's Lisa, and welcome back to another killer episode of Nashville on the Rocks. Our guest today has been blazing a trail through the hard rock punk metal scene since his days growing up in South Lake Tahoe, California. Most recognized as the long-standing bassist for the legendary godfather of shock rock, Alice Cooper, he's paid his dues and then some, relentlessly touring or writing or both with many other acts as well, such as the Eric Singer Project, LA Guns, and the late great Ronnie James Dio. About a decade ago, stepping into the spotlight as a songwriter, vocalist, and guitarist, he unleashed his unforgiving hard rock metal band, Bisto Blanco, with guitarist Chris Latham and co-singer Calico Cooper. With a perfect cocktail of heavy riffs, driving bass, and melodic choruses, he and Bisto Blanco are set to tour this summer in support of their forthcoming studio release scheduled for July. So, if you call yourself a true metalhead, you're definitely going to enjoy this interview with our friend, Chuck Garrick. Hey, Chuck, thank you so much for being on the podcast and making the time to be here. This is very exciting for Dan and me. We're so happy that you could join us today.
Yeah,
thank you for coming in studio.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, appreciate very cool.
Yeah, so we appreciate you, man. You know.
Right on.
Yep. So for all of our listeners, we have Chuck Garrick here. He is really well known in the hard rock metal world. So obviously, you're the bassist for Alice Cooper. Yeah. You're the singer slash guitar player for Bisto Blanco, and you have a wide variety of bands that you've played with over your career. This is just super exciting to have you here today.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you got to start somewhere before you get to Alice Cooper. You
know? It's funny you say that. And Alice Cooper, man, he's 74?
He's a little bit older than that.
Really?
Yeah.
And I saw him for the first time this year in September when you guys played Bridgestone.
Right.
And I was so impressed. But it was my second time seeing Rob Zombie, first time seeing Alice Cooper, and I was just like, man, I am so happy that he's out touring and like still making music and killing it. It came out with the snake and everything. It was, I don't know, that would have made me nervous, but very rock and roll, very rock and roll.
Well, you know, Alice is good at what he does, you know? And I mean, you'd never know how old he is. Or when I first met him, that was 20 something years ago, and he still does the same exact show that he's been doing since I've known him, and seems to be the same exact show he's been doing, you know, at least through the 80s.
Yeah.
So he loves what he does.
That's
so
cool.
And he surrounds himself with great musicians and great people, so it makes it easy for him.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you guys were great. I think I took the most videos because we had good seats. I'll say that I took the most videos of your band and of Alice Cooper and just like of you and Nita Strauss and that was super cool. Like just seeing that, but I was super impressed.
Good.
So it was a fun show.
Yeah, well, we were just out there to destroy Rob Zombie. That's all we wanted to do.
A little bit of a friendly competition going on there, right?
Rob's a dear friend.
And the fact that you guys have another tour scheduled coming up in what, September?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah, I think August, September, yeah.
Okay. So I was looking into that and I'm like, it was just super cool to see that. And I will say that you are very busy. You're always on tour and you have a tour coming up with Bisto Blanco, right? But that's in Europe, right?
Well, yeah. So we just released our first single off our new upcoming record, Connecticut, and we just released our first single, "Run for Your Life."
Mm-hmm.
Killer song, by the way, dude.
Thank you very much, brother.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Produced and co-written by Chris Harms from Lord of the Lost. I don't know if you guys know who they are, if your fan base does, but you guys should check them out. They're really creative guys and super talented. Chris Harms is a great songwriter, and him and I and Calico did the record in Germany.
Nice.
And we had a great time. It was really fun working together. So we finished the record, and Run for Your Life was the obvious choice for the first single because it's definitely going to be a little bit of a transition musically, which we always like to take chances and do something a little different than each record, you know, has its own little flavor.
Sure.
So this one, kind of Run for Your Life, just seemed to be a good song to have as what people know as Bisto Blanco, and maybe, you know, what they if new fans coming in would hear this and think, oh, wow, they like the song, then they could go back to the back catalog and go along the journey with us. So
yeah,
we've got four shows coming up in Europe this year, end of July, into August, mm-hmm. ending at the Wacken Festival, which is, I don't know if you guys know what that is, but it's one of the biggest music festivals in Germany, and I think possibly in Europe as well. It's a three-day, four-day festival, and I think there's 100,000 kids, people show up there.
Wow.
Okay. Really fun. It's like the holy ground of heavy metal, rock and roll music. Yeah, so we're excited to do that. It'll be the first time I've had the opportunity to play Wacken with Bisto. So
nice.
The guys and the gal are really excited about that. And then I'll head back out on the road with Alice and then pick back up in September in the States with Bisto. And then some more dates in November over in Europe with Bisto as well.
Very cool.
So I'm going to have a very busy year, like you said. I'm a busy person. This year is going to be a little bit busier than the previous, which is good.
Just keep it moving.
Rocking is my business, and business is good.
Business is good.
Hey, Chuck, can I ask you, what is the difference between those European metal crowds and the American ones, man? Is there a big difference there, you feel?
I think there is. I try to keep everything cohesive when I'm on stage. I don't want to feel like, oh, you know, I'm in, you know, Ohio and who gives a shit, you know? Or
right.
I'm at the Wacken Festival and hell yeah, these kids rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair. But I do think there is an understanding, if you're a European rock fan, that your heartbeat is different for metal and rock and roll, and they understand that, and I think there's a more of an excitement over there.
Right.
There's an energy that it's infectious, it's contagious, and I think they understand how to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that U.S. doesn't, because I think during a festival and bigger in some other shows, they really get into it. But rock and roll is dangerous and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And we over here like to make it comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Okay.
A bathroom nearby, maybe an air-conditioned venue or something like that. You know
right.
what I mean?
Not got over the there, boot man. Seats and
not
all that
there,
behind
dude.
The glass.
They've been sitting in that front row and camping out all night, and they're ready to party and ready to
I
have
feel like
a good
that's
time.
Like the 70s all over
yeah.
again.
Yeah, you know, maybe. I'd like to think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I there is a difference. It doesn't mean one's better than the other, but there is a difference.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I've had my fair share of European metal bands that I've been fans of over the years.
Yeah.
So definitely into that.
Sure.
I have to say, I want to kind of dive like into your background a little bit, because I'm always interested to hear where people came from. So did you come from a musical family?
Not necessarily. I mean, my dad ended up later in life, when I started picking up the music, he had a real fondness for bluegrass, and the Civil War was something he had taken a lot of interest in.
Mm.
So he started playing the banjo, and then I had already sort of learned to play bass at that time. So we got an acoustic guitar, and him and I would jam together on occasion, and bass, and we'd jam songs together. But I was much older. I was, you know, like in my late teens, 14, 15, when that started happening for him. I just came from a family of just of people that worked really hard.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was a hardworking man and a real supportive guy, and my parents were as well. But, you know, I had two older brothers that were definitely kind of on the wrong side of the tracks, if you will. You know, they were ruthless and brutal, but they're also they lived a lot more life than I had lived in my early years. And so my brother Randy kind of turned me on to bands like Humble Pie and Queen and Ted Nugent and everything 70s. And I had just picking up the trumpet in elementary school.
Okay.
Because I loved music as well. And then he took me to go see Humble Pie and all these bands, and I really just started feeling myself just like all of a sudden the light bulb just clicked that this was something that I wanted to know more about. And I had some neighborhood kids. I came from a really, really small town, so I was lucky enough. I don't even know how it happened, but
where did you come from?
Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
So I lived in the mountains, and just down the street were two brothers that played drums and guitar, and
they didn't just randomly.
Yeah, and it was bizarre, and because not only did they play, but the brother, the older brother, Mike, could really play. At like 16, he was playing Van Halen and Zeppelin, and just like really well, like really, really well. And
that's awesome.
They would play together, the two of them. They wanted to form a band. So I just said, well, I just went and got a bass. I didn't know anything about it. And
you had never played bass before?
Didn't know anything.
Wow.
And we just started learning songs together and jamming at backyard parties. We'd learn a bunch of Sabbath tunes and you know, whatever we get our hands on to. We had no singer, and we would just jam. And
that's cool.
That's just how, it's how I kind of just formed a love for that style of music, and that's where I developed the love for, you know, like Bob Daisley and, you know, all these different bass players that just were coming from all of these different genres of music that I was listening to. John Deacon and you know, Cliff Williams and all of these guys that I just was like, wow, I just was listening to music. I didn't necessarily focus on who the bass player was as much as I focused on the vibe of the bands and stuff. So
sure.
Yeah, I just started taking over, and quickly, just to wrap it up, school just wasn't a thing for me. I graduated and everything. I did it because it was important to my parents, but I think I knew that that was the path I was going to go. I had no other choice.
Yeah.
And so I went, you know, from there out of high school. That's when I moved to Los Angeles and went to music school.
Now, I don't know how far is Tahoe from L.A.?
It's about eight hours or so.
Substantial. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It might as well be like another state.
What's that, bud?
It might as well be like another state. You know? 8 hours is a pretty long
drive. Yeah. Sure. Lake Tahoe, you know, is on the Nevada-California border pretty much.
So. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you moved to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And then did you move with anybody? Or
I did. Well, the journey started with three other guys and ended with me in L.A. You know?
Yeah.
It was
survival of the
fittest. Yeah, man. Well, I think when you're, you know what you want. You know what I mean? Like if you got a plan and somebody's coming along with you, if they're not with you, then it just becomes sort of an issue. And as a young kid, you know, we don't have any money and I don't know what's going to happen next. And that was the exciting thing about it. But for a couple of these other guys, it was too risky.
I get that.
And we, you know, everybody started drifting off as we started making our way there. We were staying at friends' houses, making it our way to L.A. And we broke down kind of thing. And we had to stick around at somebody's house for a couple of weeks and got it fixed. And we're hitchhiking in and out of town. And I've fucking loved it. I thought it was so cool, you know, like I can't wait to see what happens in LA because, you know, I had no idea, but they didn't make it. I did. I ended up getting a motel that I lived in for the first month.
Okay.
I'd saved enough money in Tahoe to kind of survive. I got a job at a music store right away. That's where I met Brother Latham, the guitar player for Bisto.
No kidding.
Wow, you guys go way back, huh?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I just want to add, you know, when you have that drive and the passion, there's like that inner river of you get from music. It's not from anything exterior. Mm. It's just like, it's one of those things where I'm going to be doing this till I die. It doesn't matter how it ends up. And you know what I'm saying? I think that's what it takes to be a true artist too. When you're on that journey, you got to be committed.
Yeah.
It was a natural feeling. It wasn't something like I'm not like a guy who's been in a, like, you know, a rock star, if you will, my whole life. Like I haven't, I've always had jobs. Even as a musician, in LA, I always worked. I would work. I always had a 9-to-5 or some sort of job to pay my bills. I've never lived off of anybody. I've never had that type of lifestyle. You know, my parents weren't able to, you know, provide that for me. But I just had an understanding that I loved music. And when I went to LA, I was surrounded by, you know, 100,000 other people that loved music. Mm. And to me, I was just, whoa,
yeah.
Look at all this. Who are all these people?
That's
and
cool.
Wow. And it was cool, and it was terrifying, and it was fun,
exciting.
And it was dangerous, and it was exciting, and all that stuff. And I had a lot to learn when I was in music school, because if they needed a guy that could play Black Sabbath and Queen and Iron Maiden and AC/DC, then I was the guy. But that's not what they were teaching there. It was blues and jazz.
You
and
went to fusion. Like a music
Dick
school?
Grove School of Music.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had to learn to read music and transcribe and all of it. And
well, that's kind of cool.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot. And I was playing jazz, and I was playing fusion, and I was playing funk, and all of the fun stuff that I never would have ever played if I was just left at my own device
sure.
to learn to play bass. And it really taught me how to become a bass player and to be a working bass player.
That's a really interesting story for it. I think that's a cool way to go about it. Dan and I come from upstate New York in Rochester, and they have a huge jazz. It's just jazz
yeah.
up there. You know, they have a huge jazz festival. It's like 300,000 people come to it like every year. So, you know, that's, I have an understanding for that. So it's always good to break out of your box, especially when you're young, and get some sort of other training other than what you would be doing, because it just opens your horizons up.
Well, yeah, and I thought the one thing that was really interesting about jazz, and I'm not a jazz bass player by any stretch of the imagination, I love going and watching people do it and play and perform it. But I realized with jazz, it was like, well, what am I doing? And the guy's like, well, here are the chord changes, and you're gonna play the walking bass line through these chord changes. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm just gonna improvise. I'm gonna make up my own shit. Oh, I'm gonna fake it. Because I'm not a jazz guy. I'm a rock guy. I'm a kid who grew up on this other music, so I'm faking it. So then I learned, well, if I'm going to fake it, I got to fake it well.
Right.
You know, because I've got these guys like Joe DiBartolo, the bass player for The Tonight Show, and Dean Taba, one of the most sought-after studio bass players in L.A., watching me play bass. And so I'm faking it really super loud and just playing with the drums and doing my thing. And that was my opportunity to kind of fail, because it didn't matter. I paid to be here, so they were going to have to work with me.
Oh,
but
so
it taught
funny.
Me to, like, kind of say yes to everything and go, well, I'll just figure it out, because what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
And that kind of helped me hone in my skills early as a bass player. I realized that, you know, you can be great and that's cool, and I can sit in my room and practice, but man, I just want to get out there and play.
Just play.
You know?
Yeah,
and
apply it, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for that, too. I think at some point you got to sort of step off the cliff. And I did, and I failed miserably lots of times, and auditioned left and right for tons and tons of different bands, and I think it was when, you know, I just felt like I didn't care anymore. Really, I know I didn't care about where I was or what was going to happen from all of it, or I sort of placed the importance of being a bass player and a working musician as sort of just secondary. It was just sort of as a, you know, it was like, yeah, just having a cup of coffee. It's like that important to me. That's when I thought, that's when the rivers opened, the floodgates opened for me, you know?
I could see that. And it's almost like you're definitely
creating, liberating, right?
Yeah.
You're creating resilience.
Yeah.
In yourself. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Like a fearlessness, whatever,
yeah.
of taking the chances.
Well, I was fearful but at times. But, you know, it's tough. I think that's the thing when you realize, when you're sitting there and you go, hey, man, I don't know. I got to figure out what I'm going to do. I got to survive. So
mm-hmm.
I think when you just take the importance out of everything and you just go, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but, man, it's really far away. I need to take these steps first, and that's, you know, I want to be able to provide for myself. I learned other trades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I learned to build a motorcycle recently.
Right.
But I mean, back then I learned how to, you know, I was a carpenter. I did so many different jobs.
Oh, that's cool.
And learned how to do other things to provide for myself. And I think those were the, when I started doing that, I don't know, it just helped me, it just kind of put some other things in place. So the next time I got an audition, I just felt like I was a little less worried about the outcome.
Sure.
So by that mindset probably helped me play a little bit better.
Yeah.
A little bit more relaxed, a little bit more free, And I noticed that I was starting to get more attention from people, and then I was getting asked to do more and more gigs.
Yeah, you're like not white knuckling it. Yeah. Like you're like, you're kind of settling into it more, sure. And you're like, it's not the end of the world type of thing.
And with each like successful thing that you got over a hump or you hit a bump in the road, it's like more validating maybe to keep continuing and say, hey, what I'm doing is working.
Sure, sure.
For me, you know, it just gives you more confidence and going just committing, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, knowing, like, look, not a lot of people know this, but I didn't, when I auditioned for Alice Cooper, I didn't get the gig the first time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Well, and I know you played with a few people before you even got with Alice Cooper, so, like, I know you did, you played with Ted Nugent?
Mm-mm. I backed up Ted Nugent at a charity event.
Oh, okay.
It's
okay.
Awesome. My Wikipedia is great. So it's like, well, I played with Ted Nugent and Journey and
you know, it's funny is that your Wikipedia is like this big. So I'm like, is this even correct? Or like, what is this?
I played bass with Ted on one or two events where it was like a charity event. And we did like probably five or six tunes together or whatever.
But okay.
Yeah, fuck it. I played with Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
Did you play Wango Tango?
I did.
Yeah, hell
did you
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Then and did you play with Dio then?
Oh,
so
yeah.
That was right.
Yeah,
that part
correct.
Was right.
That was
the
definitely
best.
Right.
That was probably, I don't know, single-handedly one of the coolest things that ever happened.
And is that like was that like your first?
So I did a tour, a summer run with LA Guns. I got a gig with them, and this is sort of, you know, the beginning of my career. I had my daughter at the time, and I auditioned for LA Guns, and
do you mind me asking what year this is?
I think it was like 99.
Okay.
I auditioned for LA Guns. I got the gig, and you know, I was a good fit for the guys. I primarily got the gig because like the pay was shit. It was terrible. And I knew that going into it. And I didn't know what to do because I was, you know, a single dad at the time. And I'd support my mom and my sister. And everybody's like, hey, you know, go do this. We'll help you take care of Alicia, my daughter. And you can. It's going to be 3-4 months. No big deal. So I was like, great. And the money was terrible. And I remember, like, Cece, it was with Poison and Great White and Rat. And Cece's like, fuck it, Chuck. Just fucking do it. Nobody knows who you are.
Just
do it, and, you know, maybe get something out of it. I'm like, all right, so I did LA Guns, and it was great, and Tracy became a really good friend, and
Jizzy
was singing, and Steve Riley, you know, was a really good dude, and we did it, and it was terrible. The money was terrible, and it was awful, but we had a lot of fun. And I, you know, I got out there, and I was playing sheds, and I was playing all the big places, and we had a lot of fun, and I was like, all of a sudden, you know, I came home and they had fired me because of they wanted to reunite with the original band members. And I was like, oh, and I actually was kind of relieved because the money was terrible and we had fun. I just didn't see my future was going to be in that band, you know. But I wasn't sure. But again, this goes back to me being kind of fearless at the time because I was like, well, you know what? I know that either else is going to happen or, you know, whatever, no big deal. I'm cool. So I was working in a recording studio at post-production place. And I had a good friend who was Ronnie James Dio's bass tech, and Jimmy Bain couldn't go to Europe and Japan. And they asked him, Chris, hey, Chris, do you know of any bass players? And he goes, I do. I know a guy who just got off the LA Guns tour. Now, that's not me making a phone call or anything. That's me going and doing a shitty tour for no money. And now everybody thinks that, you know, it's really cool and you're really big and famous and all this stuff, right? So it was nice. I see how it all worked. And then so I got a phone call from Wendy Dio. And she asked me if I wanted to audition. And I said, yes, of course. And I knew all that stuff. I was born and raised on Dio. Like, he was my guy, right? I mean, I loved Rainbow.
He's one of my guys.
I loved Sabbath, and I loved his solo stuff. And you know, I knew it all. Like, it was, yes, no-brainer. I'm there. And so a couple weeks later, I auditioned, and Ronnie hired me right on the spot. I played 3 or 4 songs, and he asked me what I was doing in November. And I said, nothing. So he offered me the gig and asked me if I had a passport, and I said yes, which I didn't have at the time, so I had to go after the gig and get one. But again, it goes back to just sort of faking it, and you know, what am I going to do? Tell them, no, I don't have one. Sorry, thanks for the opportunity. I got to figure it out. So I figured that out, obviously, and I did the Dio tour. And I'll never forget, because I went and saw L.A. Guns a couple nights after I got the gig.
Oh, that's funny. You're like, thanks, guys.
Yeah, and they were like, hey, man, sorry things didn't work out, bro, but, you know, you'll find a gig.
You're like, I'm cool.
I did. I found one. They're like, oh, cool. Hey, who are you playing for? And I was like, yeah, Ronnie James Dio.
Is that when you you saw them in the Enormo Dome, you know, and shit in the lobby?
And I don't mean to throw it in their face or anything like that, because Steve and Tracy,
no, but
they
it's,
were
it's,
such good guys.
It's hilarious.
I mean, they gave me an opportunity, but it was
hilarious.
Like, holy shit, bro. So that worked out really well, and I did that for 2 years, and I got to see the world. It was my first time going over to Europe and touring, and we opened for my favorite band of all time, which was Motorhead. And
nice.
Like, those guys became really super good friends of mine, and they still are.
They know
management and everybody.
Dude, Chuck, they know about your perfect impression of Lemmy, man, right? You know what I'm saying, dude? You're kind of famous for that shit.
You can't, man. I mean, when it's good, right?
Motorhead
to me, just like, I sat there and I watched every single show, every single night on tour with them. I hail them, and I just love their energy. I love their take on rock and roll. To me, they're the Rolling Stones of, you know, that type of sound.
That's
awesome. They're so
and Lemmy's
original.
Lyrics and shit, and he's a smart motherfucker.
Matter, man. That guy didn't care about anything, and I loved them.
Awesome.
And they were so great. They were so great live, and Mickey D's drumming was so powerful, and I love it. And I did the Dio tour for a while, and then Jimmy Bain came back because they were going to go do the U.S. run, and after the U.S. run, I took a couple of years off because at that time I really was focusing on being a dad with my daughter, who I'd had, you know, basically since she was 1.5.
Sure.
I was coaching their soccer team, and man, we were just having the time
That's
of
adorable.
My life. Yeah, we were having so much fun. Like, it was art classes and school, and I was just into it. I was working at a recording studio, and I was dialed. I was like, man, I am so set. And then I got the call with Alice Cooper. Eric Singer and Gilby Clark,
nice.
A friend of mine, referred me. So I auditioned for Alice, and I didn't get it. And the truth be told, I really wasn't bummed, because I was my life was so good.
Okay.
I was so happy where I was at. I was enjoying time with my kid, and I was cool with it. I auditioned. I didn't have a great audition, I didn't think, anyway. So I was like, well, you know, I'll just hey, thanks for asking me. But I kind of felt like it hadn't gone away yet, you know? So they always stayed in touch with me.
Okay.
And then I think it was about a year and a half or so later, I got a phone call in the morning from one of the guys in the Alice Cooper band saying, hey, man, we'd like for you to come to join the band if you'd be into it. So that's how it's all started. And my first time meeting Alice was on stage, filmed a television show with him where I filled in as a bass player. We did three songs, and
jumped right in.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. And Alice offered me the gig right there on the spot afterwards as well. And
that's awesome.
I thought it would last a couple of years, and it's been 21.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and time flies. I bet, man, when you're having fun. Right?
I look at pictures of myself. I was like just this young kid.
Yeah.
Dude, speaking of that, dude, how do you... Dude, you look like you're 25, dude. I don't know what you eat. You got to be exercising every day, all that stuff, living a healthy life, man.
What he's doing.
I try to eat healthy as much as I can.
Man, I might have to ask you for some tips, dude.
No problem,
you know what I'm saying? All right.
No problem.
I need help.
I will help you.
I love it.
I need help, man.
I love it. So I've got to say that playing with Alice Cooper, once you got into the band... Did you guys just kind of settle in right away? Did it jive well?
Yeah, the jive was really well. I mean, I'd known those guys for a while, especially Eric and Ryan. Roxy was new. We were kind of new friends, but we kind of knew each other a little bit. I had a lot of respect for those guys, Eric and Ryan and Alice and Teddy Zigzag and those guys. Really, really great musicians.
That's cool.
You know, and really knew a lot of they were all just like walking jukeboxes, man. Those guys can play anything.
That's nice.
So I was super intimidated because, like I said earlier, I was I'd taken time off. I was done in a way. I wasn't sure. So I walked into that thing, and I really realized when I saw the set list that I had a lot of fucking songs to learn, a lot. Okay. I had a lot of catching up to do because there were so many different versions of these songs between band members and live versions and record versions and all of this stuff. And I had to really change my style of playing. I wasn't really hip to Dennis Dunaway that much until I started getting into the Alice Cooper old stuff. And I realized, wow, I have a similar approach to Dennis with this stuff. So it was became fun to learn, but it took me a while to catch up to those guys.
Mm.
Where I find myself in that situation now, when anybody new comes in, I always tell them, hey, just chill out. Don't worry, because we got you, and you know, it just takes you time to go through all these songs, because Alice has such a massive collection.
Catalog
of songs. And we had to, and those guys seemed to know anything he wanted to play. You know, if they said, hey, this was our set list, and all of a sudden you go, hey, what about Is It My Body? And I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know that one. But then they would start playing it. So mm-hmm. I'm sitting there just going, oh yeah, this is so embarrassing because I don't know it. They do. But they were all real patient with me, and I would just go home. I don't know if you're familiar with the record Eyes of Alice Cooper. It came out when I was in the band. Mm-hmm. That's the record I was played on when I joined the band. So we would learn the record that day and then rehearse. And so I'd go home and I would learn a bunch of Alice songs. So that was my whole, you know, month or so,
just
learning the record, learning, you know, what we're doing for the album, going to the rehearsal, trying to figure out what my role was, and just honing it in. And they're all really great. And, you know, that's where Calico was in the band as well. It was just a great little family. It was great, great people.
Chuck, when you're, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're all good.
When you are learning this stuff, man, what type of guy are you? Are you like an over-preparer? You worry that you're not up to par and you always come over-prepared? Or you just kind of let it be free and you absorb it the way that you absorb it and you're good with it?
No, I take both approach, man. I think sometimes songs can either become, they're easily learned. You're like, okay, yeah, cool. Other songs, you're just going to be like, hey, man, I'm learning this tune off the record.
Mm.
And Eric Singer is now going to be playing drums. So how much of this is he going to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And how much of the guitar work is Ryan going to be doing? Where are we at musically with this thing? Mm. So sometimes I would just have to trust that I knew the part, and then we would go in and rehearse
it.
And
then you have like an improv.
Yeah, you would just rehearse it. We'd have time to rehearse it.
Sure.
And Alice, unlike Ronnie, Alice isn't going to tell you what you're playing.
Okay.
He'll know if it's wrong, and he'll give you the opportunity to get it right. Ronnie, on the other hand, was very meticulous, and he could sing your bass line.
I could see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it had to be right.
Mm-hmm.
And I would dig my toes into my boots, man, on stage, and I would play everything, just every note perfect for that guy.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't, he would look at
you. To be the stank guy?
Yeah, man. It was like, whoa, you didn't want that. Yeah. I didn't want that kind of attention.
Yeah, so you don't want that attention.
You know?
On you.
The only attention I wanted from Ronnie was one night I went out drinking, and me and Simon, and we got hammered, I think. and it was a late night, early morning, rolling into the hotel, and we were leaving at like in an hour, and we were just getting back, and I come walking in. Ronnie just looks at me. He's like, oh my God.
He's like the referee.
He goes, what in the fuck happened to you, man? I'm like, you don't know, and it's all good. I'll be fine. And I go to my room. I'm just trying to gather my stuff. And that was the attention, because he thought that was fun, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
He knew you were having a good time.
Yeah, I didn't want the attention of making mistakes on stage. So I did that one time. I had one boo-boo, and I tried to keep that to a minimum.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, I, you know what? I'm enjoying all these stories, and I really want to dive in more into the to how you start working with Calico and Bista Blanco. We're gonna take a break,
yeah,
real quick, so I can get some gear together, because I teach my guests how to make a cocktail.
Let's do it.
Now, you do have your bike today, so I think that you're right. I think that we should avoid drinking alcohol. So we're gonna make a mocktail.
Yeah,
is that cool?
Mocktail. Yeah, yeah.
No okay, problem. Awesome. So I'm gonna get some stuff together, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. This is Michael J. And you are either listening to or watching Nashville on the Rocks.
So we are back. We're going to make a fun mocktail. And I'm sure that you might guess on this show, there's a couple people I've interviewed that don't drink, which I think is kind of fun. And I enjoy the fact that you said that you really don't like a lot of sugar, because I think a lot of mocktails have sugar, additional sugar you don't need. And maybe just as a woman in general, I'm always trying to watch for, you know, I want to have a couple of drinks, but I don't need like excess calories. So
We're both trying to watch our girlish figure.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So what we're going to do here is we're going to do something a little bit fun. We got some bitters. We got some lemon juice, some Topo Chico, and some ginger ale. We'll just use for a little bit of extra flavoring. Okay, so the thing about carbonation is that you never want to shake it. For my guests at home, you never want to put it in this tin and shake it. It will explode in your face. That's not fun. So what we're going to do is...
You're blowing up the table, babe. Just want to let you know.
Oh, I'm so sorry, because I'm like slamming everything.
It's okay. It's
okay.
Rock and roll.
All right.
Just letting
you know. So we're going to... this is the same ice we're going to use in the glass. So we're just going to shake this tin of the contents, and then we're going to pour it right in the glass. So we're going to take this. We're going to take the small end right here on this jigger, and we're going to fill it to about the halfway point. So this is fresh squeezed lemon juice. All right. I'm so excited that you're doing this. Cool. Yeah. Pour it in. Okay. So you got some ice in there already. And what we're going to do is we're going to just put this small tin on top of it. And we're going to shake it for about 10, 15 seconds. You're going to feel it get cold. Okay. All right. Ready? Talk about being on the spot. Didn't we just say that before?
It's pretty
amazing.
Badass, man.
All right, now it's starting to get chilly.
Yeah, I see it. Look at
all right,
that.
Is it frosty?
Hell yeah,
good.
Man.
Good. Okay.
Right, wash me on it.
Right? Okay. So we're just going to take this, pour it right into the glass. Now, normally I would have other things with it, but it's fine. We don't need that today. So here we are. Perfect. So we just got a little bit of ice cubes that are just diluted because of the shaking and some lemon. And then we're going to do some Topo Chico. Okay, so I am a fan of your name for this cocktail. So we're going to call it the, what is it again?
Well, I have a cocktail, a mocktail that I make. And you can add vodka or tequila to it, but I call it Kumbaya.
Kumbaya, okay.
We're having Kumbaya right now.
Very cool.
So you can call this a Kumbaya.
Very
Kumbaya.
Cool.
You can call it the Nashville Rocks Kumbaya.
I love it. So we have about 3/4 of the glass with carbonated Topo Chico. We're topping off with just a little bit of
sugar
ginger ale.
In this here.
Yeah, there's so much sugar in regular ginger ale versus like a glass of Coke. It's it's insane. I had no idea. And then we're going to take these orange bitters.
Okay.
And then we're just put a little on top.
All right.
Nice.
All right. Babe, I didn't make you a cocktail
it's
today.
It's all right.
I'm sorry.
I'll take the leftovers when everybody's gone.
And then I have this awesome little skull.
Don't worry about me.
Ooh, look at that.
Right? These are sharp as fuck, though, so just be careful. All right, so this is our little garnish. So this is our cocktail here.
Sounds good. Well, cheers.
All right, cheers. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I love it.
All right.
Take a drink. See if it's good.
Sweet. Man, must be nice, huh?
I bet it's great.
It's actually perfect for today.
Oh, it's really good.
It's pretty.
Yeah, it's tasty.
It's good by the pool or...
Right.
Out there.
Would you like a sip, babe?
It would be really cool next to the board.
Oh, this is so delicious. Gosh, too bad he'll never know.
Mm-hmm. Put your feet up next to the board over here,
there you
Chuck.
Go. I feel bad for you. There you go, babe.
Let him have a sip.
There we go.
I'm working over there pushing buttons.
I'll put my, let me put myself on camera.
Well, that's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
All right, there you go.
Awesome. Do you like it? Babe. Are you a fan? Do you like it?
I love it.
Okay.
Refreshing.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And that's the thing, is because you should be able to have something fun and enjoyable that's not just like basic, like plain. And I'm all about that. What I do with my craft is about making something that someone is going to enjoy for an experience.
Yeah, of course. And I do think it's cool to make a drink and doesn't have to have alcohol in it, just to have just... You can have just as much fun.
Exactly. That's what it's about, man. It's just about that. So many of my friends have gotten sober, especially since COVID. Yeah. Like former bartenders, they're like, dude, I overdid it. I'm like, I get it. I understand completely.
Yeah.
But so this is easy for you to try at home, and we'll link everything in the description. But so again, we have ginger ale, Topo Chico, orange bitters, fresh squeezed lemon juice, and that's it. Just shake and go. Shake and pour. But don't shake the carbonated stuff, because it'll burn your face off. So I know we only have a limited amount of time, but I just wanted to ask you about Bistro Blanco.
Yeah.
So obviously you have a few albums. You have all your videos posted, and I love the fact that you put so much work into like your videos, because that's just an extra layer of things. Like obviously the music's fucking awesome, and then you have like the visual component of it too. And so you have a new song out, and that, I mean, that's just, I listened to it the first day it came out. I was waiting for it. Yeah. I saw you on TikTok post something, and I was like,
yeah.
So I love it. So how did you end up working with Calico?
Well, yeah. So Calico and I have known each other since I started with Alice Cooper. And we've been really super tight. And I just witnessed somebody, aside from our, you know, relationship together and touring together as bandmates, I just saw somebody who just had this drive. She's a very creative force.
Mm. She seems it. That's the vibe you get.
I saw somebody who just, I felt like everybody was sort of overlooking.
Okay.
Like, She was kind of raising her hand, but everybody was just sort of like going, they weren't
giving
her the
opportunity. She had a bunch of stuff in there. I gotcha.
She had something. She's a fantastic actor. Mm. She's an amazing screenwriter. She's, her ideas, her brain is just constantly, you know, coming up with ideas. And she's very current. And I had a vision with Bisto that I wrote a couple of tunes, and I heard, you know, a female singing it, and the obvious choice was Calico to come in, because I obviously wanted to see what it would look like on stage. That's basically how it happened. She came in, she went to the studio and sang on a couple tunes, and then we just ended up touring together, and it wasn't something I don't think she was hip to at first. I don't think she had a desire to be a singer in a band. But she, you know, she loves to be on the road, and we're a cool bunch of guys, and she was now surrounded by a bunch of people that love her and respect her, and also, you know, chose her. And we wanted her talents to sort of pop, and just, she just had this opportunity to just
shine.
Be the character she wanted to be. And Machine Girl developed from all of this. And just this, I was watching this woman just blossom and come out of her shell. And she's just like, get out of my way. And she's just getting up there. And she's a fantastic performer. I mean, she really... lets loose. Like, I've never seen anybody do ever the way she can really seems to have the music running through her.
That's awesome.
It's amazing to watch. And not only that, but she directed and produced, wrote the new Run For Your Life video. Mm-hmm. We have an agreement with Bisto. It's not a very, hard one to come up with, but we don't have any arguments between the band either, to be quite honest with you. We kind of, everybody kind of knows their role, and we had,
you
know,
cool.
Said to Calico, hey, you know, I want you to be charged of the video photography side of things, because, you know, I just trust her vision. And she directed this video. We ended up doing 11 videos for the 11 songs on the new record.
That's a lot of work.
A lot of work. And some of them are, you know, full-length videos. Others are going to be, 30-second, you know, 1 minute here and there. But enough to keep the visual there for the look and the sound of the record. The sound, each song is so different in its own unique way. And this was a great way to tell the story.
That's cool.
You know, and the record will be coming out this summer. And Yeah, we're excited for everyone to hear it, and we can't wait to get out there and start playing it.
We're definitely looking forward to
thanks.
It. That's awesome. Yeah. I kind of got that vibe off of her from like a few years ago, which it was, it wasn't The Grind, but there was another song, and it's escaping me right now.
Solitary Rave?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and she was, you could just tell she was just so like into it, so yeah. like... Not knowing anything about her background, I could tell that it was something she just really enjoyed, and she did a good job at it.
Yeah, she, like I said, mentioned earlier, she's an actress. So she is really good at, you know, playing the role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at first she was like, well, I'm just going to act like a lead singer. Mm-hmm. And then she, all of a sudden she realized, like, wait a minute, this feels really good, and I'm really thinking about too much. I'm letting it roll here, and...
It's something about those genes.
Yeah, it could be. Absolutely, right? I think, you know, obviously being around her father, they have an approach to things which I do admire, and I think most people should practice more, which is no's not an answer.
Mm.
Especially when you're a creative person. If you're in a band or you're an artist, painter, whatever it is, no is not the answer that people want to hear, or you should be telling yourself. It's a yes, but what if, and then you add what's important to you,
okay.
or how you see it.
Sure.
And that's what Calico is. So I will say to her, hey, we don't have any props tonight. Everything got left in London, and now here we are in Germany, and we're screwed.
Sure.
We don't have your props. But I did find this pile of lights.
Right.
She's like, yeah. Okay. What if I got, and then she'll
just make something happen.
She'll make something happen. She'll be like, oh, okay. Well, we can do that. I'll do whatever she's going to do with it or whatever. She's not going to just say, what are you, crazy?
Yeah.
You know, it's stupid.
She's not going to say that ruins everything.
Yeah, never, never. And the same with me. The same will go with the, when she's telling me or wanting me to do a certain thing or something. And so it's kind of opened up everybody in the band. It with Bisto is that, you know, we have learned that, hey, whatever you do is cool. We want that. And we will champion you, and we will put you in the limelight. But we also know that you will help support us when this part's coming along or whatever. So it's not a division of importance with anybody, or nobody's kind of put in the corner. We all kind of, you know, we need each other, and we let everybody know that. You know what I mean? So we're all sort of the Sherpas.
I like that.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier that way. When people know they have a responsibility, and again, like if I'm going to, you know, ask, you know, her to you know, I'm not going to set Calico up for failure, and she's not going to set me up for failure either, and I'm not going to set Brother Latham up for failure. So we kind of lean on each other's strong points,
yeah.
and then what happens is you realize that not all of us are the same. Before you know it, you got this army of people that are good at these things, and now you feel comfortable about it, because maybe something I'm not good at, Calico is. So we lean on each other for those type of things. So we've learned to just set ourselves up for success other than pointing fingers and calling each other names.
I like that.
No, it sounds like a true democracy too, man, like being in a band with people with like-minded, and the goal is just to have everybody be happy and contribute. And
yeah, it is. It's right, true, you know, man. As long as they do what I tell them to do, everything will be fine.
Yeah, man. That's what I say, man.
It's a real team.
It's a real team effort.
Chuck.
Just listen to me.
I was going to say, it is like the most perfect team, though, like in just having it in that sense that you could do.
Yeah, and I think the thing is what people need to realize is that it's on the road, anything can happen. You want to be stuck. I try to think of it as like, who do I want to be stuck on the side of the highway with, you know?
Mm. Oh, and, that's a good way to
Yeah, because it does happen. Or who do I want to be stuck in a venue when nobody's there to see your band play?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know, and who's going to give it their all anyway?
Right.
We are. And that has happened to us, you know. And then you know, a couple months later, we're playing in front of a sold out, you know, a stadium, 50,000 people. But who knows what would happen if we didn't treat the what some people would say bummers or failures with still... You know, fun and using it as a opportunity to practice.
There's a lot of wisdom to that.
Yeah, sure.
And
Definitely.
Yeah, no, that's something that like you don't hear from many people or just don't think about it concisely is that. When is Biso Blanco going to tour the U.S.?
Yeah, September. We'll be on tour in September.
Fantastic.
You know, I've got a busy year with Alice and Bisto. I wish we were doing more dates with Bisto as well, you know, but it's going to be selective dates. I think there's like 10 shows we're doing in September. We're going to be over in Europe in July and August and then back in November. But, you know, we'll always be out and about doing something.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to come and see you this time, for sure. This is my first time doing it, and it'll be my first time seeing Bisto Blanco, and just the milestone of seeing the Alice Cooper show this year. So, Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I know that, man, I just want to say thank you so much for coming here, because I know that you're a very busy man and just making the time to come hang out.
That's cool. And thanks for inviting me, and congrats on this awesome podcast that you got going on, and
thank you. We're excited. We feel good about it.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Sure, bro.
We feel good about it. It's a lot of work, but it's good work. It's fun, and I got a good partner in crime.
Everything's a little, if it's not hard work, it's not worth it, maybe. I don't know. You know?
Yeah. I like to be busy, and I like to do a bunch of stuff, and I mean, just do it with my husband. It's cool. It's great.
Does he know about it? About your husband?
I don't know much, Chuck. I don't know much. She just tells me what to do, dude. Right. I have no idea what I'm doing over here.
Well, cheers.
Cool, cheers to you.
Thank you so much for coming on. And we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks, and everybody look out for the new Bisto Blanco album coming out this summer, and then the tour dates. You'll see Chuck there.
All right.
Peace out. Until next time. Hey, you've just watched or listened to another episode of Nashville on the Rocks. If you like what we do, make sure you hit the subscribe button. And don't forget to follow us on all of our socials and on your favorite podcast streaming apps. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.